Hey everyone, welcome to another episode of Peaceful Growth, a show about learning tools, tips, strategies to grow your business, life, and career without burning out. I'm your host, Anil Gupta, CEO and co-founder of Multidots, Multicolab, and Dot Store. Now let's get into today's episode.
Hello, Peaceful Warriors. Today I have a very special guest, Miriam Squab. She is head of WordPress relations at Elementor. And she has also been an entrepreneur, agency owner, product, multiple businesses, exit. So there is a lot of knowledge and experience that she has. And we're going to talk about her journey. We'll also talk about her current role in Elementor and some of her learnings and tips for the entrepreneurs like you and me. Hey, Miriam. Welcome to the show.
Thanks for having me.
Yeah. So Miriam, this podcast is about peaceful growth, and our listeners are entrepreneurs, digital entrepreneurs. So they have businesses, either in WordPress, non-WordPress, and there are a lot of different stages of the business where they're constantly looking for some new inspirations and ideas. Yeah, so today I wanted to talk to you because you have such a vast experience running an agency, running such a large WordPress product company as an Elementor and also an exit. So how about we start with maybe your journey, where you started, and tell us a little bit about your current role, but also give us a little bit idea about your journey towards where you are today.
Okay, so I actually got into the world of WordPress after my fourth kid was born. I until that point, I had been working in an intellectual property firm. I was working with reviewing and editing patents and some work on the trademark team. And I really enjoyed that job. I enjoyed being exposed to all this innovation that was, you know, being protected by this office. But I also, I didn't have anywhere else I could go there because in Israel, at least you have to have a science degree to become a patent attorney. And also after my fourth kid was born, it just became even more apparent that I needed more flexibility in my life, but I didn't want to abandon my professional aspirations. So while I was on maternity leave, I actually started thinking about what I could do on my own. And I just started off by working, offering services around marketing content and copy and some translation work. And as that was going along, I realized that, okay, all of this type of content or marketing efforts are happening for websites. And actually the website aspect interested me more than the content itself. Obviously, I'm still interested in content and I write quite a bit, but I really found the website side of things fascinating. So I started to teach myself how to build websites, thanks to Google, first with HTML and CSS. And then I started actually offering that as a service. And then people were coming back to me and going, can you please edit the content here? And I was like, meaning like change it on the site. And I was like, this is so annoying. So I started looking into what kind of content management system I could use for my work. Explored a number of options, decided to focus on the open source direction, which really I identified with strongly once, you know, as I learned more and more about it. And at that time and today, the main CMSs available that are open source are WordPress, Joomla, and Drupal. And I just really liked WordPress. I liked working with it. I liked the templating and theming system. I liked the plugin ecosystem. And I also found that people in the community, even back then, that daughter, is now 19. So you can imagine, it was a while ago. Even back then, the community was very friendly. So I started building WordPress websites. And I was actually one of the first in Israel to offer a WordPress service for business purposes, not just let's have a blog, you know, for my hobby or for just personal reasons, but that it could be a good business tool. And then when WordPress 3.0 came out and WordPress became a full-fledged CMS, then I was well-positioned to start getting even more business when companies started realizing that they should also be using an open source CMS. And WordPress became known as a good solution even for businesses. So that's how my agency kind of developed, taking on more and more business. and eventually hiring. My first hire, her name was Rebecca Markowitz. We actually have been working together ever since. That was like 16 years ago. Or almost 17, actually. Anyways, and yeah, so that's how my agency started forming. That's how I started my journey. And then I got to the agency stage.
How long have you had that agency for?
So the agency was around for about 13 years, and we worked with a lot of tech companies and very large nonprofits who had more customized needs for their WordPress sites. It was always very interesting to me, our work. I love doing things where I'm learning more. So I was just constantly learning, you know, new challenges, new types of websites. Also, as time goes on, there's more different solutions, different approaches to doing things. So we were always, you know, able to continuously improve. And that was really great. And I did that. And yeah, so we did that for 13 years. And at that point, I had quite a lot of ideas for products that I wanted to potentially build and launch, but I had more kids. I have seven children, so I kept having babies, and like, there's only so much you can do. Like I couldn't run a company, an agency, and manage it and be a parent to seven kids and also potentially start a side project. That was not happening. But when my seventh turned three, so it's not like she was going off to university or anything, but like I had passed the baby stage, I came up with the idea for Stratic through our work in the agency. And Stratic is the startup that I founded subsequently. So the concept behind Stratic was WordPress has a lot of benefits and brings a lot of value, but it also has certain pain points that just repeat itself across almost all websites, and everyone who has dealt with a website at any point, and particularly if it's a website that's important to their business or organization, they've experienced either a security breach, scaling issues if they're running a campaign, speed and performance issues, those kinds of things. So I was inspired by this new approach to web development called Jamstack.
Mm-hmm.
Now they've become a bit less rigid in their approach. But that time, the founder of Netlify, who came up with the term, he was pushing static site generation. And when I learned more about that, I was like, wow, that solves all the issues of WordPress. However, it also has a lot of limitations. The way that, you know, that approach, you lose all of the benefits of the WordPress CMS, the editor, the plugin ecosystem, because of the technical aspects of how that Jamstack approach works. But maybe we can combine these two worlds and get the best of both worlds. And so that was how I came up with the idea for Stratic, where you basically turn WordPress into a static site generator. So you get to use WordPress as usual. And once it's published, and then you basically click a button and publish it as a static version. Static doesn't mean it's not dynamic. It doesn't mean it doesn't have interactive capabilities. It means it's referring to the architecture, where it's just a collection of static files, HTML, CSS, JavaScript. And once you publish a site like that, it's like, The WordPress attack surface is pretty much gone. It's super fast and it's super scalable. So as I started bringing that idea together and working on it, like considering whether it's something I wanted to pursue, I got accepted to Startup Accelerator. And at that point I started kind of shifting away from my agency. And then I actually was able to sell it and focus fully on Stratic. So that's like how I got from the agency, which was an amazing journey and I loved it.
Mm-hmm.
I also feel like I needed a change. I wanted to try product-based business and move away a bit from services. Also, you know, being in Israel, which is like the startup nation, I wanted to be part of that kind of approach to building a business. So that was Stratic.
Yeah. So I have one question on the agency side, and I definitely have a lot of questions on the Stratic side too. But for the agency, I wanted to ask this, like you started, you bootstrapped an agency business, you ran it for 13 years. And so the question is, if you have to start it all over, let's say agency business, if you're going to start agency business again in the future, what would you do differently this time based on your learning from the past agency work?
So I didn't know enough to know that I should have hired a salesperson. Because I was fully dependent on inbound business. I learned to promote my personal brand and leverage that for business for the agency. So I became pretty well known as a WordPress expert, at least in Israel and kind of outside of Israel as well, because I started to participate in the international WordCamps, the WordPress mm-hmm. conferences. So I spoke at the first WordCamp Europe.
I think that's where we met first time. I think you were a speaker and I was, I attended your session on, I think you talked about security, right?
Oh, that might've been in Paris. That
oh,
makes more
that's
sense.
Right. Yeah, that was in Paris, correct.
Yeah. So the first one was in Leiden in the Netherlands. And it was a big deal for me to go. I was leaving behind my kids. And also I'm at that point, I wasn't used to like travel. I never traveled. Like this is a whole big thing. Like I had traveled, but not like, it was like once every few years to visit some family. It was never like that. So
not for the business or work.
No, now I travel a lot, but then it was like a big deal.
So you said you were getting inbound leads, right? So that's from your content and SEO efforts.
So it was like my content. I was pretty good at identifying opportunities where I should speak, and help strengthen awareness of me and of the work I do with my agency. The thing that I learned about speaking at conferences is super valuable, but you don't see results right away. When I first started speaking, like I spoke at some pretty significant conferences, not just WordCamps, but I would speak at like SMX and things like that. And, I was like, well, if I'm on the stage at SMX, then people are obviously going to work with me, but it doesn't work that way. What happens is that they then know about you. And then at some point down the line, they may turn, reach out about work that they need done, or they may refer us to their friends, like be like, oh, I heard Miriam speak at conference. Oh, you're looking for someone to do WordPress work, reach out to Miriam. So it's all about kind of like planting the seeds for future work.
One thing I wanted to add into that is I had the same realization a few years ago in my agency business that I thought like going to conferences, attending the events, speaking, sponsoring, all that is going to bring a lot of new leads and business. But after doing that for multiple times, I realized that there are different our actual potential customer, they are in the different stage of the buying journey. So when somebody reach out to you from your SEO content or website, they already have a problem. They already have a need, so your closing cycle will be faster, quicker, and predictable. But when you go to events and conferences, they're not right now at the stage where they have a business, they have a project, they have a buying intent. So it takes a long time, unpredictably long time, so it's kind of like they both have a very different closing cycle, as well as the number of leads that you can expect from a conference versus a website. And the types of lead that you will expect is also very different. And it took a while for me to learn that lesson.
So same. I know that I should have hired a salesperson, but for like my situation where I was running the business on my own and also, a mom, the inbound business worked really well for me because, like you said, when someone comes to you and asks about your work, and asks for, to have a meeting and then a quote, means that they're already like, if like there's a 100% scale for sales, they're already like at 75% or 80% or even higher, right? They like, and especially if they've gotten references for you, that makes it even stronger. So it meant that whatever effort I was putting into closing deals, I had a pretty high success rate because they were already coming, needing our services, knowing they need our services and recommended by someone else who they trust. So because my time was limited and I didn't have other people really like helping to a large extent. Rebecca always helped me with this, but I needed to know that I could do it efficiently. So on the one hand, it worked for me and where I was at. And on the other hand, it meant that we could only grow so much. But by the way, another realization in my agency that I came to at a certain point was, so at one point we did grow and we didn't grow smartly. It was like too enthusiastic, the growth, and not enough in the pipeline to justify it. And so I became
very... Does it mean that you hired more people than you had a lead? Like, is that what that mean?
The team grew. Like, I hired more people. Mm-hmm. Also, I had a plan, which was that we would start to become more of a full service agency. So we would design the websites and we would develop them, and we would also provide marketing services. I really wanted to get into the marketing, like the online marketing services aspect of it, because that is more recurring revenue, as opposed to when you're doing once-off projects, then you're constantly running after the next project. We did offer an ongoing retainer for maintaining the sites, mm-hmm. and that was really good because that gave some kind of consistent revenue. But I wanted like more of that and less of the concern about like, okay, are we going to make sure that we have enough projects for the next month or two? So, but I realized pretty quickly, well, or not quickly enough, I'm not sure how fast it was that I realized it, but I realized that our area of expertise was you could almost call it architecture, meaning we were really good at doing the UX of a site, planning it out with the customer to meet their needs and their goals, mapping the whole thing out and doing wireframes. And then we were really good at developing the site in WordPress in a highly professional, usable way. We were not good at design and we were not good at the marketing. So I cut those things out of our offering. Okay. And it was a bit scary at first to cutting the design out, especially because you can't have a website without design. I mean, people build sites off of themes, but you always feel like it was built off of a theme. You know what I mean? It doesn't feel like it's truly meeting the needs of the of the company. So, but it worked out well because pretty much all of our clients were the types of organizations that were large enough to either have their own in-house design team or they had an ongoing contract with some other branding or design agency. So we would do the wireframes, hand it off to the design agency, give feedback on the design, get the finalized design, and then develop it. And that process worked well for us. And then the agency became more efficient.
Makes sense. So having a sales team early on, that was the one lesson. Any other lessons that you learned from that? And
so having the sales team and focusing on what you really do well and not trying to do too many things, even though it seems like it's business opportunities, if you don't do it well, it ends up costing you more than it makes you. So really focus on your area of expertise and just be all about that pretty much. I'm sure that there's people who manage to expand their services, but it's really hard. So I would say just do what you're great at and focus on that.
Yeah. I would 100% agree with the focusing on you're really good at. I made the same mistake in the beginning, like when business was going really good. I started like, oh, we should do that. We should do that. We basically kind of like started offering, working on like, oh, we can do the Drupal website. We can do the Joomla website, or we can do the site core. Like basically we started to kind of like, offering too much and like focusing on multiple different things. That didn't go well. And in 2019, we decided to scale down focus on only few services where we really were good. And it actually created a drastic result. So pretty much our growth was 2x compared to the previous year with half the team size and half the service offering.
That's amazing. It's amazing how that works out. I think, people don't want to say no to business. If someone comes to you and says, I want you to do a Drupal site, you, as a business, you're like, well, I should say yes to that revenue. But by saying no, you saw that it led to growth, which is, it's a really hard but important lesson.
Yeah. And also, it's very hard to kind of like keep yourself updated. So WordPress is growing, it's changing, scaling, like a lot of, now we have Gutenberg and like so many different things keeps adding up into the CMS. And so you need to have like focus for, you know, to investing time and energy to learning this platform so that you can offer better solutions to your clients. But if your focus is into five CMS, then it's very hard to kind of like, catching up with what's going on and bringing in that fresh knowledge into the business.
That's a really good point because You're right. Almost any service that you offer, you need to always be up to date. You have to know what's going on in your industry in terms of products and other approaches. And that is really hard for an agency to do because you have to allocate time to that. So it's already hard, but it's important. And then if you like add other products to the mix that you're trying to support, then forget about it. Like you're saying, you're just spread too thin. It's a very good point.
Yeah.
Okay, guys. So if you're interested to check out how Multicollab works and how Multicollab can solve your problems or improve your content publishing workflow, you can go to our website and click on the Try Demo tab in the menu section. Then simply fill out your details and there you go. Now you have access to the demo environment where you can test all the amazing features that Multicollab has to offer.
So Medium, now let's talk about Stratic. So your agency business was, I believe, bootstrapped.
Oh yeah, yes.
Right, and a Stratic, was it a bootstrap or you had any investment or funding? How was that structured?
So in the beginning, we didn't have funding. I was in two startup accelerators, neither of which took equity, which was great. They were just there to support startups, and they were really good at like getting the founders up to speed on what it means to build a startup. One of them had a cash prize that was handed out to 10 startups out of the cohort, and we didn't win. And at the time, I remember being so disappointed because I was like, okay, we really need money, right? That's always how it is. I really need money. And looking back, I saw that founders that got that funding too early didn't know what to do with it. And so they just spent it on things that they were guessing about. And then in the end, like in so many cases, it didn't go anywhere. So while I thought it would be great to get that funding, I learned that getting it too early is not good because you really don't know enough. So we actually, it was just me in the beginning. And then eventually my co-founder, Josh Lawrence, joined me. And then we were just kind of hustling, just trying to get it to a place where we could start to raise funding so that we could also grow our team. And eventually we were able to do that. So, but it took long. Everything ends up taking longer than you want it to, or you think it should.
Yeah.
Like that's just how it is. It took longer, which was obviously challenging and stressful, but it was at a time. So we incorporated in 2018 and we raised our pre-seed round. And that enabled us to build our product, get our first customers, build out our team a bit more, and then get to the point where then we could go out and raise our seed round. So we were like building to stages to be able to raise funding, to be able to grow, essentially. That's how that worked.
Yeah. And so when you know that, okay, now this is the time where I'm ready to raise some seed funding or have some, you know, equity in the business or investors, what are some of those initial steps? Like, where do you go? Because a lot of entrepreneurs, I believe, especially in the WordPress space, you know, they are so focused on creating a business and growing a business. When it comes to raising the capital, I believe, you know, a lot of us are struggling. What are some of those initial steps like that you would suggest that someone who's ready to raise capital should do?
So raising capital is really hard. It's a numbers game in many ways. And what I mean is, well, first, okay, you need to get connected to investors. You need to be prepared to talk to investors. So you need to have a deck And also be prepared that whatever deck you have will not be the deck that you stick with, because as you meet with investors, you're going to start getting feedback. They'll ask you questions, they'll challenge you on things, and then you want to reflect that in the deck. So, and also as they challenge you about things, you get better at answering those questions and being prepared for it. I recommend in the beginning meeting with investors that you're like less enthusiastic about them being investors in your company, because it's good to like practice before you get to the ones that you really want. Mm-hmm. And that's in a way it's practice. Obviously, if those investors decide they want to invest, then yay, that's amazing. But it is important to practice, and you can practice on friends. You can even like, if you know people who are VCs, venture capital investors, then you can also reach out to them and say, look, hey, you know, I'm actually not like actually raising funding right now, but I'd like to share, do my pitch on you and get your feedback. They kept surprising me, but it was pretty consistent. People are very happy to just share their time with you and give you some help and feedback. So it is intimidating to reach out to people and ask them to help you, but I recommend doing it.
How do you reach out to them? Let's say once you have a list of potential investor that you want to, you know, work with, then like, what's the way? Like, do you have to just go to their website, call them, email them, or have someone introduce to them?
The best way is an introduction. I came to founding Stratic with a lot of connections already, because I had been connected to the Israeli tech scene for 13 years through my agency, because I had been working with a lot of tech companies. So that kind of helped. And a lot of those connections were able to introduce me to VCs. You do want to try to get introductions if you can. Mm-hmm. It's also hard to know which VCs you want. Like, there's the big names, which everyone like will talk about. And then you think that you have to want them, but it's hard to get funding from them, and they can be kind of out of reach, and that's okay. Mm-hmm. There's actually a lot of VC funds. So, you know, you can aim for them, but you also want to try to keep your, you know, mind open to smaller funds and things like that. It really helps to come through an introduction. It makes a big difference. So we were fortunate to get a lot of introductions, but also don't be afraid to ask for introductions, right? It's like also asking someone to do you a favor, but that's okay. Mm-hmm. Just keep in mind that when you're asking someone to introduce you to a VC fund, they need to feel comfortable doing that and confident in what you're doing as well, because anyone who's connected to the VCs, you can't just keep spamming them with startups, right? Just because someone sends you a deck doesn't mean you should forward it to the VC. You have to be very selective so that the VC will pay attention to what you're sending to them. Like, I'm talking about the person who you want to do the instruction for. So, you know, you should have a good connection with them, and they should, you know, believe in you. And your pitch should also be strong to them so that they will then feel confident making the introduction to the VC. Mm-hmm. But even with introductions, so we were fortunate to have someone connect us or introduce us to Eric Ries, who's the author of the Lean Startup book, which is like the startup Bible.
Yeah.
And he's obviously very well connected and very well known. And he was very enthusiastic about what we were doing, and made tons of email introductions. Not everyone was willing to meet us, even though the introduction came from Eric Ries at all. Not because of him or us, but sometimes, you know, there can be different things around it. Like, they don't understand the space. We weren't based in the US. Some funds will only meet with people based in the US, if they're American funds. Some funds in the US will only meet with people who are actually in their geographical area. Like, a lot of San Francisco based funds only talk to funds in San Francisco. That's all legitimate. You know, they have their focus. But just because you have like a rock star making introductions for you, that's actually not a guarantee to getting meetings at all. That's like, it's a crazy thing. And it really is a numbers game. Like, you need a lot of introductions. Investors, if they say, will often actually introduce you to other investors, even if they are saying no to you. They may be like, okay, I'm, you know, you're not a good fit for us for X, Y, Z reasons, but you should talk to this person, and then they'll make an introduction. And that's amazing also. It's just a lot of time in all of that.
And you mentioned about incubators and accelerators in the beginning. Did they play any key role in, you know, finding these investors or venture capitalists, or not that much?
So in the end, yes, but it's, you know, they bring in a lot of investors to talk to the founders and to meet them. I think that the investors come in because A, they like to support the tech ecosystem, you know, like keep it strong because you want a next generation of founders, and they want us to know them. And potentially when we get to the right stage to reach out to them, funding is it's a two-way relationship. Like we need the funding, but they also need to deploy capital. Less so these days, you know, especially when things were crazy and people were throwing money at everything that moved. They really needed to deploy capital, but in general, you know, that's their mission. So they need to have good deal flow. And so they want to know about the companies that are being founded and innovation that's happening. But even so, each cohort, it depends on the accelerator. Let's say in the bigger one that I attended, we were like 50 startups. And then the next year it's another 50. And like how many investors are there? You're still, it's not guaranteed at all. From our participation in the accelerator, I think we got one investor who I had met while there. I think that was it. But I made a lot of connections there. And it kind of put me on the map, so to speak, enough that I could ask for introductions or, you know, ask for help or reach out to people. It kind of was like, it's not exactly a stamp of approval, but it's like another certification that we're serious-ish, even though we're early stage.
So one last question I have on the raising the seed capital for Stratic and your whole experience and the process of the raising the capital there is, let's say, in the future, you create another business, you know, and you're going to need to raise the capital again. What would you avoid during that, based on your learning from this phase? Anything that you would try to avoid and not to do that?
I can't think of anything. You know, it was a bumpy road. It wasn't smooth, but no, I think... I can't think of anything that could have been avoided.
But anything would you do differently than you did with the Stratic?
But one thing that we like found ourselves doing during the fundraising process, which at a certain point I realized we had to stop doing, was we'd get feedback from an investor and then we'd change our pitch around based on that. But that was one investor. You need to stick to your guns about what your messaging is. You need to simultaneously hear feedback and hear the questions and tweak it where it makes sense, but also not like dramatically change everything just because someone says something. Like we met one investor. So at the time, serverless technologies was like very hot. Serverless technologies are still being used today, but it's less of a conversation. And Stratic uses serverless technologies to a certain extent. So one investor was like, that's the worst idea. Serverless technologies are so expensive and you're never going to be able to take money off of this. And then we're like, oh shoot. And like, I think we kind of changed our pitch and started removing serverless from it. But then we're like, okay, that's no, we shouldn't. It was something like that. Like, so trust your gut. Yeah. Investors have tons of experience and they, you know, they have a lot that they bring to the table, but they're also not you. And they're also not experts on what you're doing. They can't be experts in everything. So you need to be able to listen, but also stick to what your gut says and your messaging and be consistent, because if you feel that that's right, that was something that was a long way.
Makes sense. So now let's talk about your transition from Stratic to Elementor. What sparked the motivation for your exit from Stratic and joining the Elementor?
So we were moving ahead with Stratic and we were working on a partnership with Elementor. We saw that more and more of our customers that were coming to Stratic were Elementor users. Obviously, I mean, Elementor is very widely used. It's now the most popular plugin in the WordPress repository, right?
Yeah.
By number. So, you know, the use was just growing, and Stratic actually, like, out of the box, or at least in its earlier stages, didn't support Elementor. Because Elementor has a lot of like JavaScript and stuff, and we were not capturing it well, and like the sites would break. So also Elementor has a form system, and we supported Gravity Forms and Contact Form 7, but we didn't support Elementor Forms, and more people were using Elementor Forms. So we wanted to have like a proper partnership with them. And so I was in there, you know, they're Israeli as well. So I was already knew people from the team. I knew the founders because I had organized a bunch of WordCamps. By the way, this is another example of things that you do in the past coming to some other point in the future, like way in the future. The last WordCamp that I organized was in 2016, and we joined Elementor in 2022. So just so you know the time frame, but everything matters. So I had met them through, you know, them sponsoring WordCamps and just generally being part of the WordPress community in Israel. And we became pretty friendly. And also I knew a lot of people on the team. So we were in touch with them, and like, we were working with their dev teams to make sure that like, sometimes we needed their input on what we were developing and things like that. And I just kept running around talking about Stratic, and also at like an Israeli WordPress conference, and it caught their eye. And then we went in for a meeting, you know, about the partnership, but then they suggested that they acquire us. It was like, so
that's interesting.
Definitely surprising.
Yeah.
And you know, we had to consider,
but in a good way, right?
Oh, definitely in a good way. It was like jaw-dropping, but not in a bad way. Just like,
yeah.
Okay.
But were you already ready at that time? Like, you know, if there is a right offer comes in, then you are ready to exit, ready for the exit?
More ready then. So it wasn't like a crazy concept. So we considered it, and it was the right direction for us for many reasons. And so we joined Elementor in June 2022. So it's like almost a year and a half ago, which is crazy. I can't believe that time flies. Yeah.
Great. So let's talk about Elementor specifically. I wanted to actually just touch upon that Elementor is very popular, one of the biggest WordPress plugin by installs, and also the community of the Elementor is huge too. You know, the people who build on Elementor. In fact, we have this product called Multi Collab, and a lot of Elementor customers, they started reaching out. I think the similar thing that what happened with Stratic, you know, so they kind of like reaching out like, hey, we want to see if Multi Collab works for Elementor. So we put that into our roadmap, and in the next few months, we're going to see a possibility to build Multi Collab for Elementor users and the customers.
That's really cool.
Yeah. So talking about the Elementor and especially the Black Friday and Cyber Monday and all of that is right around the corner. So I'm curious to know if you are involved in the process of how you are thinking about creating a deal or promotion for Elementor for the Cyber Monday and Black Friday, and if there are any learnings and takeaways that you want to share.
So I'm on the sidelines when it comes to planning for Black Friday and Cyber Monday. I learned a lot about it last year. At Stratic, we had never done anything around it. But at Elementor, the company creates proper campaigns and, you know, offers really nice deals for people who purchase around Black Friday. So definitely keep an eye out if you're interested in Elementor. So that's in the planning stages. Takeaways are, I used to be cynical about it. I don't know. It just seemed ridiculous. It's like, what is Black Friday? Why does everyone care about it? But everyone has decided that that's a sale day. And also Cyber Monday suddenly became a thing. Like, really? But there's a reason a lot of companies
actually it's the whole week. I feel like from Black Friday for the 1 week, you know, there is
it's ridiculous. There's something ridiculous about it. And so I was always cynical, but there's a reason a lot of companies have activity around it, because it can be really significant for companies. I think there's two aspects to it. One is just the general revenue that's generated around it. People, again, for some reason, are very enthusiastic about buying things for, around this time. So I don't know. And then the other is it just creates like more exposure and plants the seeds for, you know, future business. And also potentially brings new users in the door to test things out that maybe they were hesitant to do before. It's always good to have fresh people, you know, trying your product. Yeah, it's a very serious focus at Elementor.
Yeah, good. So Miriam, last few questions, and then we'll bring this to home. One question is, you mentioned that like two businesses now also a very big role at Elementor, and you said 7 kids, right?
Yes.
Yeah, so that's a lot of responsibility, you know. And so, how do you manage, you know, your well-being and making sure that you know you are, healthy and also productive and in both, you know, your personal and professional life. If there are any tips or ideas or suggestions that you have for our listeners.
So as a founder, it was much harder for me to have like balance in my life, because as a founder, your work is like never done. That's the case for everyone pretty much. Like it's kind of the case for me now, but your work is never done, and the responsibility of everything is on you. So you don't feel like you can really rest. I almost always took my laptop with me on vacation. When I was running those businesses, like there wasn't really like vacation for me to the full extent. And it was very hectic. I think I've never been diagnosed, but I think I'm ADD. So I kind of needed that hecticness. Like if I don't like being bored. So it worked for me. But and I was able to always identify when I was like it was too much and I needed some kind of break. So at some point I started doing this thing that I don't even know if it had a name then, but like a workcation. So I would just like go to a hotel in Tel Aviv on the beach and work from there, but like be near the beach, be able to walk around and just like kind of be away and disconnect for a bit. And those types of things were amazing for me. Also, I keep Shabbat. And if people know what that is, it's from Friday night till Saturday night. Those who keep it fully, like we disconnect from everything. So I've always kept it. So no matter what, it didn't matter what was going on, my laptop, my cell phone shut down for 25 hours every week. And I was just focused on the family. That always really helped me recharge my batteries. I really felt refreshed by the time Sunday, we worked from Sunday till Thursday here. But when Sunday rolled around and we went back to work, I felt refreshed and like my brain was like ready to function at its best again. By the end of the week, it did not feel like that. I would feel just completely. So that always helped me. And now being part of Elementor, I can take proper vacation. Take my laptop. I did take it at one point because there was something urgent going on. But even then, I like, it was my like sense of responsibility. Nobody like was forcing me to do that or anything like that. So it's different when you work in a large organization, because also there's a lot more people involved. So, you know, people can be unavailable a little bit here and there and things will still be okay. And at some point I did implement that I walk every morning for a bit over half an hour. I don't do more because otherwise I get bored and I won't keep it up. It's like the exact amount where I can still enjoy it. I can feel its benefits. I'm happy I did it. It gets me moving. But I'm like not pushing in and doing something I can't do. And that I think is really important. You know, I breathe fresh air. I see nature. I get sun. I parade. And then so I've added that to my life. I don't know. It's always a struggle.
I think those, some of them, were very interesting, specifically what you mentioned about the vacation not like vacation as a, like, you know, vacation, because a lot of people who are high achievers or, you know, like entrepreneurs, and it's very hard for us to completely disconnect and not to do anything, you know, that basically kind of like bores us. So what I have started is I call it growth trips. So what I do is I'll have like 3 or 4 days every 3 months where I'll try to go either in the nature, and sometimes if I feel motivated about that, otherwise I'll just, as you said, I'll just go to a hotel, you know, just book a hotel, go to a hotel, and I'll just like, okay, what I want to do in these 3 days, you know. So for example, I'll bring a bunch of different books that I want to read, if there are a bunch of different podcasts that I want to listen. So basically it's something that, you know, it's still stimulating for my brain. It's not just like I'm just there watching TV, because like a high achiever, it's kind of like very hard for me not to do anything and not to be productive. But I try to compensate my recharge time with some productive activity. I call them productive breaks and growth trips.
That sounds amazing. I love that idea. Because yeah, I'm the same. People are like, oh, do you want a massage? I'm like, I cannot handle getting massaged, because within 5 minutes, my brain is like running and I got to stand up. I got to go do something. And yeah. Also when I'm on vacation, if it's just me on vacation, there's no way I can do nothing. Like if I'm with my kids, I'm like busy with them, but I love that idea. Ooh, now I want to do that. Great.
Yeah. Great. So Miriam, we are about to actually wrap up this episode. And big takeaways that I noted here is, if in the agency, you mentioned about make sure that you have a good sales team early on for the raising the capital. I think big takeaway was make sure that you try your pitch with, you know, some of the investor that you're not much excited about, but basically that will allow you to kind of fine tune your pitch for your more motivated investor. And yeah, for work-life balance, I think just disconnecting, you know, allowing some time, go to a hotel, go to a beach or somewhere that you feel refreshed or energetic, just go there. And necessarily, you just don't have to close your eyes and sit there, you know, do whatever you feel that gives you joy. But the important thing is, yeah, just have that little change in your routine once in a while. I think that was another takeaway. Anything else that we didn't have a chance to talk about that you would like to mention before we wrap it up?
Just about the balance thing, just really pay attention to yourself and know when you're pushing yourself too much. If you collapse or implode, you're not only damaging yourself, but you're not helping anyone. You need to be healthy and strong for everyone around you and to keep going. So it's like, it's hard to allow yourself to take a break or go on vacation, but it's important and critical that you do that, not just for yourself, because for people who are like leaders or managers or founders, you feel like you shouldn't do anything for yourself, but it's not just for yourself. It's for everyone else around you. If you're not like fully functioning, then you're not helping anyone. So pay attention and stop when you need to stop. It's so important. So that's it. I'm just like emphasizing that.
Yeah, no, that's great. All right, everyone. So we are going to wrap up this episode here. We're going to put all the resources, Medium's website and some of the other good stuff into show notes. So feel free to check it out if you're listening or watching to this episode. And yeah, Miriam, really grateful for your time today. And everything that you shared has been super valuable to entrepreneurs. And I hope it will inspire you know, a lot of entrepreneurs in the future. And once again, thank you so much for your time.
Thanks for having me. I enjoyed the conversation.
Me too. All right, you take care. Bye-bye.
Thank you so much for listening to Peaceful Growth. Sign up for my newsletter, Learn and Grow, on anilg.substack.com to get more personal growth and work-life balance tips delivered to your inbox weekly. Also, check out the show notes of this episode to get access to all the resources mentioned during this interview. May the peace and growth be with you.